Faith watched the couple gather on the floor and join in the sweep of the Alderanian walk. Then he felt hands against his back and was propelled into their midst. It was Lara, advancing purposely.
So, why did you launch me out onto the floor, just looking after your wingman?
Partly that, and partly I'm maneuvering you.
I hate to disappoint you, but you're far from the first woman to do that to me.
Her smile broadened. Ah, but how many women maneuver you to abandon you? It was the point in the dance where couples raised their hands together and spin in relation to one another. Lara signaled the move by raising her hand, but while they were in mid-spin, he felt too many fingers on his for just one moment. And when he finished the maneuver, he came face to face with a startled-looking Dia Passi. Lara and Jansen, now partners, pulled away and waited. Dia's posture and the tension in her arm suggested that she was not too comfortable with the dance, but she gave him a game smile.
I think I have been fooled.
And I think it was because of something I said.
Which was what?
That I... She paused, apparently, to consider her words. That I wanted to talk to you, but that I was afraid to.
I didn't know who to be when I spoke to you. Who to be? Who were your choices?
Dia Pasik, and Yap Pasik.
The pilot you've become, and the little twilight girl kidnapped off Ryloth.
She nodded, her expression somber. The day after we returned from Iron Fist, I woke up, and I wasn't either one of them anymore. Somewhere in between a girl I thought was long dead, and a woman who was too bloodthirsty for me to particularly like. But I thought about all that had happened the day before, and decided that I liked being alive. So, I wanted to thank you for not letting me die.
You're very welcome.
Why had that been so hard for her? Understanding where she had come from, with his limited knowledge, was too great a task for Faith. But an idea emerged from his efforts.
Dear, when was the last time you were really at ease among others? The last time you felt safe in someone else's company?
Her gaze drifted off into the distance of time. At ease? I don't know. When I was a child, I suppose. And safe? She looked startled. The last time I felt safe was not so long ago. When I tried to kill myself and you would not let me. Just before I fell asleep, I knew that you would not let anyone hurt me. You would not even let me hurt myself. And in that moment, I knew myself safe for the first time since I was a child.
He looked down into her eyes. Eyes that were too large and luminous to be dear. Eyes that were familiar to him, yet opened up into a woman he didn't know. A woman who had come into being only since the mission to Iron Fist.
That's what I wanted to say to you. What I didn't know how to say before, she said. That I know that you feel you failed Tong Feng. But you did not fail me. He took her head in his hands and kissed her. And was swept away by the sweetness of her kiss. At the spicy taste of her so different from human women. He felt her arms encircle his neck. And they stood motionless as the dancers swirled around them.
Our target, Wedge said, is almost certainly a Kuat drive yard facility in the Kuat system.
He nodded at the holographic display which floated above the table in the crowded conference module. The Wraiths were following his presentation with rapt attention. They seemed different this morning, more possessed of themselves. Some of them nearly smug, alive and eager.
But regardless of what Zinj's plan is, our objectives stay the same. Number one, most important, is to get a transmitter on Iron Fist, or the new destroyer Zinj plans on capturing, or both. Goal number two is to stay alive, and to take out as many of the enemy as possible. Any questions?
Donos raised his hand. What are our individual roles for this mission? Jansen tapped on his datapad. We'll be broken down into three units.
Unit 1, Hawkbat. That's Commander Antilles, Dia, Kel, Faith, Tyria, and Piggy. We fly, we shoot, we kill. Unit 2, Infiltrators. Lara has faked up dossiers on alternate identities for herself and Shala and forwarded them to Zinj in the hope that he'll select one of them to accompany his advanced team, the one we believe will be taking over the new destroyer. Unit 3, Wraith Squadron. The rest of us will be taking our X-Wings to join Mon Raymonda as part of the ambush phase of the operation. That means we'll be stationing elements of the New Republic fleet at points as close as we can manage to Zinj's likely escape courses. With any luck, if there's enough time between the accomplishments of the Kuat raid and the come-get-me signal from Iron Fist, the Hawkbats from the first part of the plan will be able to join the race for the third. And when we hear that signal, Garno said, we jump in and drop the heavy end of a hammer on Iron Fist and the new destroyer. That's it, Wedge said. The word from Zinj arrived later that day. It included a rendezvous, of course, and a request that Kachanasin, Shala's Hawkbat identity, join Zinj's advanced unit in the assault to come. Hours later, the Wraiths assembled in their hangar. Wedge looked among them, catching each stare in turn. For those of you who believe in the Force, may it be with you and guide you. For those who don't, trust in your intent, your weapons, and your wingman. He clapped his hands. Let's go, people. The pilots broke rank, exchanged handshakes and embraces, and headed off to their individual mission. Sungrass, the Hawkbat's transport, was directed to land in Iron Fist's main bay, where a full complement of TIE fighters, interceptors, and bombers was arrayed for takeoff. Faith and Shala emerged from their ship's exit port, and Faith took Melvar's hand.
General Melvar, allow me to introduce Kachanasin, my hand-to-hand combat special.
Melvar frowned as he looked at the commonplace device in Shala's left hand. Why do you need a datapad?
It's a weapon, General.
Shala traced her finger across the hinged edge of the datapad.
A standard scan won't show that this edge is heavily reinforced. If I decide that someone needs some additional information in his head, I can insert it manually.
Melvar chuckled. Faith did too, but wasn't feeling too merry. They couldn't afford for Melvar to pay too much attention to the datapad. The technically proficient Wraiths had spent hours refitting smaller, more modern datapad gear into the larger, older case, and had reinforced the hinge end, as she'd mentioned. But they'd also fitted in a secret slot and a number of small explosive devices that Kel had put together. A basic scan wouldn't reveal them. They'd be masked by the technology within the case, but a more thorough one would.
Well then, Melvar returned his attention to Faith. Launch and stand by at your convenience, and I will deliver this young woman to the unit she will be working with.
Shala's unit was made up of 8 people. 3 men and a woman, all large, with movements like natural fighters, were dressed in the uniforms of maintenance workers, the words Kuat Drive Yards emblazoned above the left breast. 4 others were in stormtrooper armor. Melvar succinctly explained the mission, and Shala let her eyes open in simulated surprise when she discovered that the target was not a cargo satellite above Coruscant, but a superstar destroyer.
At this hour, Melvar continued, Razor's Kiss, that's the name of the new superstar destroyer, is almost deserted. What's left are mostly security details and workers finalizing critical assemblies. We've spent 2 years helping a colonel in charge of the ship's landing parties build himself a lucrative smuggling operation. You specialists will get onto Razor's Kiss through the officer's landing bay using access codes the colonel uses for his little side operation. He will advance from the landing bay to the bridge and seize it. Then enter programming that will allow you to operate the ship from the bridge. A hypercom signal to us will alert the fleet that it's time to jump in, and Razor's Kiss can move out on its escape vector.
Shala said,
I take it that I'm to be some sort of lure?
Melvar nodded. You'll take points through much of the team's advance through the ship. It's inevitable that the team will run across crewmen we haven't accounted for. Your job is very specific. Distract them. Delay them. But most importantly, don't let them get off any sort of signal.
The sign of a perfect mission, said Rasslin, the shuttle captain, is that it's boring.
Shallon nodded. The mission had been boring, so far. They'd taken the creaky wreck of a first-generation Lambda shuttle from Iron Fist, made the hyperspace jump into the Thuat system, made an approach vector on the planet, transmitted passcodes that were apparently accepted, and now the shuttle was finishing its first pass, so that it could continue on to the orbiting shipbuilding station from a proper approach vector. Razor's Kiss drew before them until it blotted out the entire universe. Rasslin guided them toward a tiny white dot that gradually grew into a standard rectangular bay opening. In silence, they exited the shuttle. Shala was the first out of the deserted bay, entering a long corridor that was eerily dim and quiet. She moved toward the bridge, a hike of over 3 kilometers. She checked the map transmitted to her datapad, turned left into a cross corridor, and bumped straight into an Imperial Naval Lieutenant.
Identify yourself, he said, his voice more curious than angry.
Shala put her hands to her hips, a pose of naive irritation.
I'm Katya, of course. I'm just looking for Major Lears.
The lieutenant frowned and brought up his comlink.
Shala grabbed his hand with both of hers, twisting it and forcing his palm forward and down at a painful angle. He dropped the comlink before he understood what was happening, and as he stiffened and tried to draw away, she twisted his arm up and behind him, then shoved him forward into the bulkhead. The metal rang with the impact of his head against it. The unfortunate lieutenant went limp. Moving fast, she took his sidearm and tucked it under the waistband of her pants. She bound him with his belt and stuffed his holster under his tunic. By the time her team arrived, she was merely in charge of an unconscious prisoner, and there was no sign that he'd been armed. They arrayed themselves outside the door to the security foyer leading to the bridge. Braden, the only other female member of the team and second in command to Captain Rasslin on this mission, began the methodical process of opening the door. After long minutes, Braden spoke.
I've got it. 3 seconds after it opens, it closes. Don't start shooting until it closes if you can avoid it. We don't want the sound to carry.
They formed up, stormtroopers to the fore, Shala at the rear, and the door shot up. The stormtroopers advanced without hesitation, and Shala heard one of them say,
"Don't move, and you don't die."
They spread through the security foyer and into the bridge beyond.
And suddenly, Shala was alone.
True, she was mere meters from Braden and the stormtroopers stationed before the doors to the main corridor, but she was forgotten, her task done. And the ship's main communications consoles were right here, available to her. Moving quietly and quickly, Shala drew a cable from her pocket. She plugged one end into her datapad. The other, she fitted into the standard terminal interface on the communications console nearest her. Then she brought up Kasten's program that would do its best to bypass Razor's Kiss security on its own. Then set the datapad on the console chair and slid the chair in close, making the datapad almost impossible to see. As a last detail, she switched off the terminal screen, so the actions of Kasten's program would not be visible. Then quickly moved to the opposite console. She sat in one seat and put up her feet in another. Braden emerged from the turbo lift and caught sight of her.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Shala put her hands behind her head.
My job is done. I was going to let you professionals do the rest of the work.
True. Well, stay out of the way.
You can count on me as long as you're paying. I'm inert.
Braden turned away and headed up to the bridge and the command walkway. Shala relaxed, but made sure her stolen blaster was close at hand. If anyone noticed the datapad in the chair, she had to make sure that he noticed nothing ever again. The Superstar Destroyer was in motion, and the bridge of Razor's Kiss was a riot of noise.
Through all of it, Shala sat comfortably in her chair, watching and listening to the others hurry about their duties. The data pad at the communications console pinged the audible cue that the tracking program was in place. The stormtrooper at the door turned toward her.
Did you hear that?
I did. She rose, staring intently beyond him, and came a few steps forward. The noise came from the other side of the door.
No, it was behind me, toward you.
Idiot. Your helmet is fouling you up. She nodded significantly toward the door. Something's on the other side. Shala quickly picked up her data pad, yanked the cable free, and pocketed it, and joined him beside the door. Let me through. I'll give it a look. The stormtrooper thought it over, then activated his comm ring.
Captain, we're hearing some things at the main door. Katja has volunteered to act as forward reconnaissance in case there's some activity out there.
A moment later, he said,
Captain says it's a good idea.
The stormtrooper handed her a comm ring.
Good luck.
He keyed the main door open. And she was through, the door shutting behind her. And suddenly she could breathe more easily. She waited a couple of minutes, then keyed her comm link and whispered, Katja here. Report, Braden said. There's a security detail a few meters up the corridor. They have munition. I can eliminate one or two and then set off the charges they've brought. The next group they send is going to be a little put off by the mess I lead. Moments of silence, then...
That's authorized.
From the data pad, she took the four explosives Carol had rigged for her. She set two of them down on the floor against one wall, depressed the buttons that would begin the explosive 10-second countdown, and began running. Now it was time to find an escape pod and safely wait out the conclusion of this battle. And the one to come. Zinja's fleet dropped out of hyperspace well within the Kuat system, and Faith, once again disguised as General Cargan, roared out of the cargo bay as soon as the opening door gave minimal clearance. His temporary wingman, Kel, followed in his own interceptor, and the others emerged rapidly into a star system very different from the one they were supposed to have expected, of course. The comm wave suddenly became crowded with shouts and infuriated questions from the other pirate gang Zinj had recruited for the mission. In character, Faith keyed his comlink.
Talkback leader to Iron Fist. What is this? Where's Coruscant?
The chuckle he received in response was a familiar one. He recognized it as Melvar's.
We never said you were going to Coruscant, Spockbat. Welcome to Kuat. Please, keep to your assigned role. Everything will work out very profitably.
There was a moment's delay, and the pitch of the general's voice lowered.
Hawkbat, leader. I regret to inform you that the insertion team reports that they have lost Katja.
Face's gut went cold.
How?
She single-handedly eliminated the demolition team and was lost in the explosion.
Shala lurked from the walkway above the bay's pair of TIE interceptors. She should have been safely tucked away in an escape pod by now, but with her mission accomplished, another idea had occurred to her. Thus the dangerous 3-kilometer trek back to the bay by which she'd arrived. Thus the trail of unconscious foes along the hallways and passages she'd chosen for her return trip. Stormtroopers, Kuat loyalists probably wondering what to do about the ship's extraordinary activities, had entered the bay mere seconds after she had. She climbed down into the interceptor closest to the bulkhead and farthest from the stormtroopers. All systems seemed go. She climbed partway out of the access hatch, brought up the last of Kel's explosives, and threw them as far across the bay as she could. They clattered against the bulkhead behind the intrusion team shuttle. The stormtroopers perked up, swung their weapons in that direction. Shala had dropped back into the cockpit and dogged the hatch shut. She was almost done strapping herself in when the explosions went off. As the stormtroopers raced toward their fallen allies and shook their heads against the sudden deafening explosion, she brought her engines up and goosed them. Bursting out of the hangar and into space, then immediately brought her speed down. As she'd expected, the hull of the Razor's Kiss was littered with debris from the shipbuilding station. She skimmed as close to the hull as her flying skills would allow her, and occasionally rolled the interceptors to simulate the motion of debris. She wouldn't look too odd on sensors, but a direct observation or holocam view would reveal that she was a live tie. Then a single shot from a laser battery would turn her into debris. So, white-knuckled, she continued her absurdly slow flight and prayed that nobody noticed her. From here, she had to climb the hull to the Superstar Destroyer's command tower. Within moments, she settled neatly and very delicately into place between the deflector shield domes. She powered down all systems except her suit's life support and the starfighter's communications board. Then she changed the interceptor's comm unit to broadcast across a range of frequencies, took a deep breath, and said three words. Parasite 2, go. Dia had just baited one of the Imperial fighters defending Kuat Drive Yards when Wedge heard the transmission.
Parasite 2, go.
Startled, he checked over his sensor board. The parasite code meant that one of the Hawkbats had successfully pretended to crash upon the hull of Iron Fist and was in position to destroy its deflector shield dome. But all the Hawkbats still appeared on his screen. It had to be Shala, and she somehow must have put herself in a position to destroy the shields of Razor's Kiss. Iron Fist was now trailing Razor's Kiss by a considerable distance and acting as the center of her defensive screen as the Hawkbats approached their transport sunglass.
Leader, 12, I don't have enough kills.
Piggy and his fighter vectored toward Iron Fist. Face took a deep breath. That was code, and Piggy was doing what the mission called for. This was the first opportunity any of them had had to get in close to Iron Fist without raising suspicion. Still, form dictated that he key his comlink.
12, leader. That's a negative.
Don't hear you, leader.
12, blast it. 11, go with him.
Affirmative, leader.
Tyria's fighter zoomed off in Piggy's wake. The sensors showed Piggy and Tyria pursuing a lone TIE fighter up the ever-higher decks of Iron Fist's command tower. Suddenly, Piggy was in the lead, the fighter pursuing him. Piggy deliberately exposing himself to fire to account for what they needed Iron Fist's sensor crew to conclude. Finally, Tyria's voice, subdued and pained.
Leader, I have to report that 12 is no more. Our friend Mort is one with the universe.
Mort. A Gamorrean parasite. Code, meaning that officially Piggy was dead. But that in actuality he was alive and had successfully faked the crash of his fighter on the surface of Iron Fist. Piggy lay on his side. His crash against Iron Fist's hull had only been half simulated. Ahead, just over the artificial hill of Iron Fist's command tower, he could see the top of one of the ship's shield projector domes. But that would have to wait. The stars he could see in his disadvantaged position suddenly elongated as Zinj's fleet entered hyperspace. Sungrass's first hyperspace jump was straight toward Holmud, but only a light year in length. Its second carried the cargo hauler straight to the deep space rendezvous point with Mon Raymonda. When Wedge reached the bridge of the Mon Calamari cruiser, General Solo was waiting with a smile and a handshake. Any word from the Superstar Destroyer? Wedge asked. No, no word. Han gestured at the holoprojected star field that dominated the center of the bridge. Don't be so anxious. Tiggy's fighter only carries so much air, even with the extra life support he's carried aboard, Wedge said. And we have no idea what Shalaneltran's status is. So the parasite part of our plan is on a limited schedule. The Mon Calamari captain, Onoma, swung around in his command chair. There was excitement in his gravelly voice.
Communications reports a signal from the tracking program your team installed on Razor's Kiss, he said. We have a location on the target ship, only minutes old.
A blinking yellow glow appeared in the midst of the starfield projection. Han, Wedge, and Onoma moved next to it. Wedge asked, "Are you planning on a jump straight to the broadcast position?" Han shook his head.
"No, I want a little dispersal. See if we can have ships on all Zinj's escape vectors."
Wedge considered.
"My guess is that we'll be at cruising speed along the same course until it's time to jump again,"
Han pointed out just ahead of the destroyer's projected course.
"All right. Calculate time it'll take to jump to Iron Fist's course. Then we'll figure out the two most likely jump courses for Zinj to take from there. We'll put the Devium in front of one of them, and the rest of this group in front of the other."
Zinj turned and jumped. General Melvar stood right behind him.
"You did it again,"
Zinj said, cross.
"Yes, sir."
He gave Zinj a furious look. "I'm surprised you're not over there now on Razor's Kiss, looking at every rivet and dab of paint."
"Oh, I will be soon. Best to wait until security has removed the last SWAT forces and possible saboteurs."
There was a sudden surge of noise from the crew pit.
Iron Fist Captain Veller, a stern-faced man, leaned over the command walkway to peer down into the midst of the noise, then looked back at Zinj, unhappiness in his expression.
"Several ships have just dropped from hyperspace in our vicinity. The one ahead is tentatively identified as a Mon Calamari cruiser."
Zinj suppressed a shudder.
"Mon Remonda, here?" "Signal Razor's Kiss. Coordinate a 5 light-year hyperspace jump on this course. Bring all guns of both ships to bear. Before we make the transition to light speed, we're going to rid the galaxy of the Rebels' most annoying cruiser. And of the legacy of Han Solo."
Wedge roared out of Mon Remonda's port hangar and waited as the others formed up on him. Moments later, Rogue Squadron began emerging by twos and forming up by wingmate. Han's voice crackled in his ear.
"They're aware of it. They're not deploying their fighter screen. That suggests they plan to blow their way through and launch back into hyperspace."
Piggy activated his power-on sequence. Nothing happened. The fighter's interior remained dark and silent. Shala's sensors showed 4 squadrons of starfighters approaching. The later she made her assault on the shield projectors, the better it would be for her unit. When they were 30 seconds short of firing range, she swung toward the starboard shield projector dome of Razor's Kiss and fired. The dome blew apart in an impressive display of flaming gas and metal shards. She spun in space and fired again, obliterating the second projector with similar finality.
"Razor's Kiss reports catastrophic failure of topside shield generators."
The captain shook his head helplessly.
Zinj slammed his hands on the nearest bulkhead.
"Change course to 8-5. Tell Razor's Kiss to follow closely and use us for protection from Mon Remonda. Calculate a new jump on that course and initiate it as soon as possible."
He looked at Melvar.
"Launch all fighters."
Wedge's sensor board showed the first destroyer's topside shield evaporate.
"All squadrons, this is Wraith Leader. Prepare for a strafing run on this first destroyer. Ignore Iron Fist for now."
Wedge sent up a silent cheer for Shala. Iron Fist surged forward, her bow guns opening up on the oncoming starfighters. And then they were in the midst of it, ion cannons sending energy washes between them, laser batteries making space brilliant all around them. Wedge felt hair stand up all over his body as an ion blast came too close. And they were past Iron Fist. The ship's horrendous field of damage tracking and following them, and the first destroyer's guns opened up.
But now they could reply. "Fire at will," Wedge commanded.
Faint blue trails leapt out from the starfighters, homing in on the destroyer's bow, detonating split seconds later in huge balls of incendiary destruction. Ahead, a tiny spark, ion engine emission, leapt off the command tower.
"New Republic forces, this is Race 10. Please, flag me a friendly."
"Confirm that friendly," Webb said.
"People, this is the lady who just opened the front door for us."
Cheers sounded over the comlink. Then the starfighters flashed past the command tower and its ruined summit. They rained their torpedoes down on the Superstar Destroyer's stern, then looped around to add the ship's engines to their list of victims.
Assault course! This is Mon Raymonda. Sensors show starfighters launching from Iron Fist in considerable strength.
Understood, Webster. All squadrons, stay in formation. The Razor's Kiss Bridge is no longer responding to communication, the captain said. Zinge stared at the hollow projection of a live image of Razor's Kiss. The Superstar Destroyer, so powerful, so beautiful just minutes ago, was now awash in flame from bow to stern. Piggy was up to his armpits in wiring when he found the problem. His portside ion engine was completely out of commission. He had to cut the destroyed engine out of the loop, patch everything else back together as best he could, and then see if the thing would start. Finally, he flipped the power-up switch and was rewarded with an erratic whine from the engine and the sudden lighting of his weapons and flight board. Not yet daring to commence powered flight, he brought his targeting system up and tried to bracket the distant shield projector dome. One small piece of the dome fell within his targeting bracket and jittered there, showing a clean lock.
You think he plans to sacrifice Mon Raymonda to stop us?
Zinge, chin in hand, steadily regarded the tiny but growing cruiser ahead. He continues correcting his position to be more and more precisely in our path, said Novak. We can't be sure of his intent until we're past the point of no return. Then, either he moves out of our path and we can get through and go to hyperspace, or we hit Mon Raymonda and both vessels probably perish. Zinge's stomach began churning. This was still winnable. But the New Republic assault, the way they'd accurately calculated his position, the way they'd relied on his protectiveness of Razor's Kiss to slow him, was upsetting. Wedge saw the tiny green needle on Iron Fist's hull below him, a long, tentative streak that hit the portside shield projector dome, hit it twice, hit it a third time, and then the dome exploded. The source of the laser fire, a TIE fighter, leapt up from Iron Fist's hull. It looped around as if flown by a drunken skimmer pilot, apparently setting up for a descent and run on the second dome projector, but an ion cannon beam swept across it. The fighter continued off on a straight line course toward the star. The captain's shout was jubilant.
Mon Raymonda is no longer maneuvering. We have their engines, Warlord.
Excellent.
The bridge rocked, its light dimming, fragments of ceiling descending into the crew pit. Zinge clambered to his feet.
What happened?
The captain had gone from cheer to despair.
We've lost the portside shield projector. We're down to half shield strength above the midline.
Zinge felt as though he, too, was suddenly at half strength. He calculated the numbers.
Is that frigate still on our tail?
Still catching up. It'll be within firing range in 2 minutes at this rate.
Zinge closed his eyes.
Recall the fighters. Bring Iron Fist up to flank speed. Communicate with Razor's Kiss. Issue the command. Abandon ship.
He didn't have to add, we've lost this battle. Face turned into the path of the incoming TIEs, threw all discretionary power onto forward shield. Too late. Laser fire from the lead interceptor punched through his unboosted shield and then through his cockpit. He felt a sudden blast of agonizing heat to his left side. Then cold, just as intense.
Ace, can you hear me?
There was no response, and Face felt a distant sadness. Ace, whoever he was, must have been vaped. It took Face another long moment to understand. He was Ace. And he was hit. He was done. He couldn't move for the pain.
Three. You see after Ace.
Why were they worried about him? Didn't they realize he was already dead? No, they didn't. The Wraith didn't realize it was his time. Time to balance the account.
You can't measure what a boy did in innocence against what a man has to do for the rest of his life. Tom Thingman's voice from some forgotten conversation. And Tom was right. Tom, who had suffered from the Empire's success as much as anyone he'd ever met should know. He didn't have to close out his account now. An X-wing blasted past him to port, juking and jinking. He thought he recognized it as Race 11, Tyria. If she was doing that, she was being pursued. With his numbed fingers, he brought up his targeting system and swung it just to port of his flight path. An interceptor flashed into his bracket, and he fired. The interceptor exploded, and bits of it glowed as they bounced off his forward shield.
Nice shot, Ace. Cut you back with us?
I'm here. All the ties began veering off toward Iron Fist, even if it meant exposing their backs to New Republic guns. Then Iron Fist leaped forward and was gone, lost into hyperspace. Far behind, Razor's Kiss began firing off escape pods like mold spores as more and more flames gouted up from beneath her surface. One last flash, bright as a nova, and the destroyer hurled asteroid-sized pieces of itself in all directions. Hours later, Wedge, freshly scrubbed and uniformed, marched into Mon Raymonda's bridge. Han Solo was lost in thought, staring into the depths of hyperspace. Wedge approached to stand beside him. Solo took a deep breath.
We lost.
We hurt him. We eliminated the other superstar destroyer, Razor's Kiss. But Zinj is still at large. We'll get him next time. We'll bait Zinj together. And you can go back to a life of irresponsible good cheer. I'll drink to that. How are you people? Good. Lieutenant Lauren will make it. We almost lost Figgy Sabinring. He was floating off to oblivion with no thrusters, no lasers, no comlink. But Shala Neltran calculated his last known course, and Sungrass retrieved him. Wedge watched Han return to his distracted, distant staring. Han, what's it like actually being Zinj's personal enemy?
I hate it.
But I can't just hand the job off, not until someone feels about him the way I do.
Melvar appeared with his customary stealthiness behind Zinj's desk in his private office. Zinj barely stirred. How do you think they did it, sir?
I don't know. How? Zinj said. But we'll find out.
Face jumped as Kel came barging through the door, potted flowers in his hand. Then Kel caught sight of Dia, seated next to Face's bed. She had an arm around his neck, her other hand stroking his brow.
Oh, I see, Kel said. Celebration's already started.
What celebration?
Behind Kel came Figgy, Jansen, all the other race. Wedge turned toward Face, his expression stern.
Lieutenant Lauren, you returned your X-Wing to the training frigate Tidirium in the worst shape her mechanics had ever seen a flying snubfighter. You arrived in similar shape for an organism. As I understand it, parts of you and of your X-Wing were intermingled.
He had to be cut out of the cockpit, Laura confirmed.
For this, Wedge continued, we present you the award of the Mechanic's Nightmare.
Tyria held out a statuette, which was of a New Republic mechanic with wrench upraised as a weapon. Faith took the thing and looked around the room.
I want to thank everyone who retrieved pieces of me. Everyone who retrieved pieces of my X-Wing. And especially those who sorted them out correctly. On a more serious note, Wedge said. Attention!
The Wraith snapped to attention, all but Face, who tried to sit up, and Dia, who held him in place.
With all our recent excitement, Wedge said, I've neglected to finalize a little business I should have seen to days ago.
But I'm happier to do it now, since Faith can join us for it. Shala Neltran, step forward. She did so, struggling, Faith thought, to keep uncertainty from her expression.
Since being posted to Wraith Squadron, Wedge said, you have demonstrated fine piloting and intrusion skills, in addition to improvisational instincts that have benefited this unit and the New Republic. It is my pleasure to convey to you your promotion to the rank of lieutenant in the New Republic Starfighter Command.
He handed her the new officer's insignia, then shook her hand.
Congratulations, Shala.
She opened her mouth to answer, but it was a moment before sound emerged.
Thank you, sir. Don't thank me. You did all the work. Just as significant is the fact that Starfighter Command has calculated your role in the battle with Razor's Kiss and has determined that you are now authorized to paint half a Superstar Destroyer silhouette on your canopy from now on. Half that kill is yours.
Shala put her hands to her mouth as the other Wraiths cheered and patted her back. Dia, still stroking Face's forehead, suddenly frowned.
Say, what's this?
Dia pinched at Face's skin, and the others could see that a tiny flap of skin at the corner of Face's scar was loose. She tugged at it, and the scar began to come up at that edge, as though it were some sort of appliqué, with pink, healthy skin beneath it.
Face?
Dia gave a final tug, and the rest of the appliance came free, dangling in her fingers. Where he had once worn a scar, his flesh looked pink and new, but definitely undamaged. Faith shrugged.
Tom Fainan's fault. He left me some credits, enough for some elective surgery. Or the credits would go to someone I hated. I pretty much had to do what he wanted.
Well, it suits you, Dia said.
Runt reached out the door and tugged in a rolling cart. It was laden with bottles and cooler buckets.
Fish cannot drink yet, he said, but we can drink to him.
He handed the bottle off to Jansen. Jansen began prying at the seal.
And to Tan Fainan and Kasten Don,
Dia said,
and to scars you can peel off whenever you no longer need them.
Fish said, and to... Dia dropped the rubbery false scar into his mouth.
And, she said, to friends who don't try to fool you all the time.
Faith pulled the false scar out of his mouth and gave her a rueful look.
Dia, this is Wraith Squadron. You're never going to have that.
This is Anthony Heal. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, Iron Fist, Book 6 of the X-Wing series by Aaron Alston. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Sharon Matlin. Iron Fist is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1998, all rights reserved. The book, Iron Fist, is available wherever Bantam books are sold.